Once forged in the fires of PR and journalism, Curtis Dewar and Corey Westbrook united to create C-Squared. Now, on our podcast, we interview musicians and other industry professionals to give you an inside look on how to take your music to the next level.
Hello, everyone. You are listening to the C-Squared podcast with Corey and Curtis. Today, we are joined by a super exciting guest, Mr. James Monteith, the guitar extraordinaire, PR professional, member of Tesseract and Cage Fight, has graced us with his illustrious presence today, and we are super excited to have him here, if you can't tell. But before we get too deep into the interview, I do just want to say thank you for joining us, putting up with our shenanigans, braving the podcast in general. We appreciate you coming on, James.
Oh, no, well, thank you. That was a very nice introduction. I appreciate being here, and I appreciate all the stuff you guys do too, and the various ways we've worked together before. And it's really nice to, as we were saying before we started, to actually meet face to face in this virtual way and have a chat. So yeah, thank you for having me.
Oh yeah, we're definitely stoked. And for those of you listening, James is here to drop some solid knowledge bombs in his, you know, from his career, because he's been in the metal music world for a minute. So get prepared to take some notes. And just to intro people who may or may not be, you know, familiar with you, because they could have been living under a rock, we don't know. Do you want to give just like a brief intro, the nutshell version of who you are and what you do? I know there's a lot in there, but just the little version.
Okay, well, my name is James Monteith. I co-run the PR marketing company Hold Tight PR, which I have done since 2010 when we launched. And I also play guitar in Tesseract, and I've done that since 2006 when we became a live band, which, and I'm also a guitar player in a band called Cage Fight, which I started last year. And you know, I like beer. I quite like I like riding my bike. I've got three kids and I like to keep busy.
Oh, that's fantastic. And I mean, a great way to sum it all up. So first off, so for the deep dive, let's start with you as a musician. What was your path to becoming a pro musician? I know that's probably a long story, but, you know, kind of the path that you took to going pro.
That is a good question. And, you know, I could probably could talk for hours on that. But I think the short version is, I guess I just always really wanted to play in bands and play music. And I really went above and beyond to just make sure that could happen. I mean, that's also a really vague like description, but I guess an example is it's always been sort of the center of what I was doing. Like when I went to university, I studied mechanical engineering at university, which is completely unrelated. But because I kind of had in my head, well, yeah, I'm going to play in a band, but you know, like Brian May, you know, he studied, you know, physics or whatever it was. And, you know, it's good to branch out a little bit. But even when I was at university and I studied and I got my degree, but I was always playing in bands at the same time. I remember I was in a rap metal band in my final year and I remember like basically playing a gig the night before exams and really stupid things like that, which I don't necessarily recommend. But I guess that's an example of like how much I wanted to do that. And then that band that I was in, I mean, we didn't have a huge amount of success, but we worked really, really hard and I learned a lot. And actually Amos from Tesseract was in that band with me. We've been playing together since we were like 16. And then that band sort of fizzled out and I was just still hungry for more. And that was when Amos started chatting with Ackle and they started jamming together and they said, oh, we're looking for another guitar player. And so I just knuckled down and I got all of Ackle's demos and I learned everything. I learned all the parts. So I basically turned up to rehearsal and could play everything. So they had to give me the job because, you know, like who else was going to learn everything back then, I guess, because I fell in love with what he was doing in his demos and just threw myself headfirst into it. And every opportunity to, basically every opportunity to like, to do music I took and put it probably above and beyond everything else, which I think sometimes might have been a bit tricky with my home life, as you could probably imagine. I'm trying to be better at that now in my older age, But yeah, I think it was just always putting it first and also trying to be smart and not just do things because you do them all the time, you know, make tough decisions about, no, this isn't working, do something else, and until something that comes along does work. And that something that came along that worked was Tesseract. And now I'm here, I think. Does that work?
That's perfect. So now that we've gone into you as a musician, let's talk about you as a PR guy. So how did you kind of get involved in that end of things?
That's an interesting story. It kind of went side by side with a lot of the music stuff. I remember it was in 2015 when that band that I took really seriously that didn't really work out kind of finished, and I had to get a proper job. And I was like, I need to get a job. I need to actually make some money. I'm in my mid-20s now. I can't bum around, you know, playing in bands and not doing anything actually worthwhile. I mean, being in bands is worthwhile, but at the same time, you've got to make a living, right? You've got to pay bills. Yeah, we don't live in, I don't know, some kind of utopia where you don't have to work. You got to work. And I got a job at a company called Gorkana. And I don't know if you're familiar with that company. They're quite big now, but back then they were starting out, and they're kind of a media intelligence company. They basically provide information for PR companies to help them pitch. And I joined when they were developing their consumer PR side. And basically that became my day job. And then in the evening I joined Tesseract and I was juggling the two. And I basically learned about PR and how that works in my day job, working with lots of consumer PR companies who are working on things, I don't know, pitching anything from toothpaste to clothes, fashion, to technology. And there wasn't any music there, but I then did some, you know, looking into it. And obviously music PR companies did exist. And I basically set a path that's like, right, okay, well, I'm learning a lot of stuff here about PR. I want to do music. How do I go about doing that? And I remember I fired off some CVs for jobs and then heard nothing back, which is, you know, quite normal, especially in the music industry world. But I managed to get into it through Barley at Basic Records, because he came down to a Tesseract rehearsal in about 2008, I think. So going back a long way now. And he was interested in picking up Tesseract at the time. He was listening to us play, and he's basically said, yeah, we started conversations about him working with Tesseract. And I basically said, who's doing your PR? And he went, well, nobody. I've got a list of contacts, and you know, I send out a thing every now and again, but I don't, you know, I don't really do that. And I was like, I'll do it for free.
That's awesome.
And at the time he was working with some really cool bands. I mean, he was working with Fell Silent, who was like the precursor to, you know, Tesseract and Monuments and Heart of a Coward. He had a band called The Abner, who, I mean, they were really cool at the time. Who else? He actually did an Enter Shikari single back then as well. I didn't work on that, but a band Bury Tomorrow. Do you know the metalcore band Bury Tomorrow? He had their first album. So I basically worked on loads of that stuff for, basically just for the experience. And Basic was really hot at the time. All the press were really into it and lapping up what he was doing, because Barley was one of the first person to put out that kind of, for want of a better word, early djent music. And yeah, that early tech metal stuff. And so I managed to, basically establish myself as a known publicist within the media quite quickly, because Basic was hot. So I was very lucky in that sense. And then my now business partner, Lisa, also, she was doing her own PR thing, and she came on board to work on Basic as well. And that's how we met. Actually, I think we met on Twitter, probably rambling about bands, but that's when we started to work together with Barley. And off the back of the success of that, we started to hold tight. Actually, we actually started a company under a different name in 2009. I think we called it Invictus PR, because that was, but yeah, it's not important. But anyway, then we changed it to Hold Tight and launched Hold Tight properly in 2010. And off the back of the success of the stuff we did with Basic, we started working with Sumerian in the States and doing their stuff over here. And then we basically started to pick up other clients, because I guess, as I'm sure you're aware, you know, the more established your roster is, the more people want to work with you. And we basically started building it from there. So in 2010, when we launched Hold Tight, it was obviously, we're still working with very small underground stuff. Like with Sumerian, we're doing like the much smaller stuff. Like you're asking, Alexandria's were done by bigger PR companies. But we were lucky with Sumerian again, because they were doing like Born of Osiris, Veil of Maya, The Faceless, all those kind of bands, which fit well with the Basic record stuff we were doing genre-wise. So we were able to really corner that market as a PR company back then. And yeah, so we kind of grew from there, really. And as in, we started, I think it was, we started the company, I guess technically I was doing PR from 2008, but it was at the end of 2010 when I ditched my old job and went headfirst into doing music PR as my main job. But actually my hand was forced as well, because at the same time Tesseract did our, we did our first tour of the USA. We came over to the US and toured with Devin Townsend, and my day job said that I couldn't have the time off. So I was like, well, let's ditch the day job, let's try and make PR my living, and let's go and tour with Devin Townsend and, you know, live the rock and roll dream. And so just went for it, and it was very, very tough for a couple of years, for quite a lot of years, but it's paid off in the end, I think. So I think yeah, I've managed to survive in the music industry, which, you know,
cool. That's very cool. Now, just a quick question here. So just to follow up on kind of that. So you said that you basically started working with Barley, I think you said, in 2008 or 2005, something like that.
2008.
Okay, good. Then you guys started Hold Tight in 2010. So you, and then you went and quit your day job. So now how do you kind of manage working as a full-time publicist and doing all your campaigns while being on tour? Because I would imagine that would be tough.
Just have to, if you've got an internet connection and you don't mind working in moving vehicles, it's actually perfectly doable. Because on tour, like there's a lot of downtime. There's a lot of nothing to do. There's a lot of traveling. I mean, actually back then in 2010, it was a lot hard. Well, I ended up having to do everything offline in the van, because you know, what internet wasn't like it was. And then you'd get to a truck stop, and then I'd connect to the Wi-Fi, and then all my backed up emails would send, and then all the emails would come in. And so they said, like, do a data exchange at like a truck stop and then get back and work in the van. So I guess you can write press releases offline, you can do planning offline, and you can, back then you could back up all, like Outlook, back up all the emails. I mean, everything's all properly online now, but back then, you know, you could fill up your outbox and send when you did get a connection. But yeah, and in a way, I think it actually kept me sane on the road, because I mean, what else do you do? I mean, I guess everybody else, you get into video gaming or, I don't know, or reading, or, which is obviously not so bad, but I don't know. I think I managed to basically make my downtime part of my job, which was quite handy.
And you get paid twice at the same time.
Well, in theory, I don't know, don't get paid very much for being in a band.
Fair.
Definitely not back then anyway.
Yeah, no, fair enough. Corey, did we have any other PR questions we wanted to ask him before the next one?
Actually, I had a follow-up on that. So what would you say is the biggest thing that you learned getting into PR, coming from the band world, like either mistakes that were made at the beginning or things you could have done differently when the band was doing outreach on your guys' own, things that bands may not think of when they're new that you learned when you got into PR?
I think that's a really good question. I think talking specifically about PR, it's where your band sits in kind of the media landscape, you know, and who is going to cover you and why they're going to cover you and what's interesting to certain people. I guess the mistake I made, which is probably one I could have afforded to make back then, because I didn't have as many clients as say I do now, was I literally just bombarded everybody, and I was like, wanted to tell everybody about Tesseract, and like, you know, everybody needs to know about this band. Because I mean, even though we did actually, well, when we joined Century Media, we obviously had PR in-house on our first album. But before that, I was basically practicing what I was learning and pitching us to everywhere. And I think one of the biggest learnings was, it's like, you know, yeah, Tesseract obviously does sit really well in like the metal world and the prog world. Is it going to sit in sort of the Kerrang rock sound, kind of more youthful pop punky kind of alt rock worlds? Maybe not so much. So so I guess, although I wasn't that bothered, I guess, by things maybe not panning out, I think lots of bands don't really, their expectations sometimes really need to be managed of what's right for where. And I think that was a big thing that I've learned now. For example, you know, you take on a band, there are certain places you wouldn't pitch them because you know they're completely wrong for it. And I guess, but then you also need to manage that band's expectations of saying, you know, these outlets are not for you, or that audience isn't for you. And I think just like refining my idea of what fits where is one of the biggest things I learned.
I got to just say, like, how do you personally deal with clients that do that? Because I fucking hate that so much. You know, I want to pitchfork or decibel. You don't fit. You're like a new metal band. Like, decibel doesn't want. You know what I mean? So what do you do?
I usually basically tell them to, in the nicest way, to go and look at those outlets and see what bands are like them. And you're a rap metal band and you want to get into zero tolerance, which is, you know, an extreme metal. It's just like, you know, go and have a look at the magazine and see what's in there. I suppose the exceptions to the rule were if, like, say you're a really heavy band, like some of those do get into like the lighter mags, like your Krangs and your Rock Sounds and your, I don't know, I guess in the States, your APs or whatever. But those are a specific kind of band that cross over demographically into younger audiences. And I guess they're the exceptions. And they're the tougher ones, actually. You'll get like a deathcore band and they'll be like, oh, Lorna Shore have been on the cover of Rock Sound. Why are we not getting in Rock Sound? But and I guess that's a slightly more tricky one to deal with. But I guess it's also like, pick up Rock Sound and look at how much deathcore there is in there. In that issue of the Lorna Shore cover of Rock Sound, they were the only deathcore band. And I guess it's basically explaining to people, you know, why and how. And more often than not, bands do get it eventually. But it's it can be an absolute bloody nightmare sometimes when they're really highly demanding. They just have unrealistic expectations about, like, I know Matt had a client, Matt at Hold Tight. The band just announced an album coming on socials. There wasn't a video, there wasn't any content. And the client was giving him loads of like grief, saying, well, we're expecting this to be on Music Week, you know, an industry publication. Yeah, why is Kerrang not all over it? And he had to manage that. And I think very much in the same approach, saying, well, you didn't have any content. And also, you're a small band, you're not going to be in Music Week. Like, you know, if a Beyonce announces an album, that might be a Music Week, but not your little deathcore band. Obviously, you would never say little. Never say little. That sounds belittling. Yep. But you know what I mean?
Yeah, I do. I do totally. What else do we want? Anything else on PR, Corey? Are we good?
That was my follow up. So if you had one, if you don't have one,
nope. I'm ready for your next question, I guess.
All right. So Twitch, both Curtis and I have watched your Twitch stream. We both really like it. What made you want to get started on the whole Twitch streaming thing?
Well, basically, we're on a very kind of very downtimey bit of a downtime period with Tesseract. And we're just like, Dan and Jay, the drummer and vocalist at Tesseract, they've developed their own Twitch channels very successfully and developed big audiences. And so we thought, well, why don't we have a go at making a band one, just to try and engage our audiences over this really dead, quiet period. And so we've been doing it since September now. And it's been quite good fun. And we're basically doing things like musical playthroughs. A few of the guys were jamming along to new demos for the next album, which our management told us to stop doing because music was being given away. But that actually brought in quite a lot of people. I've got my silly fun one where basically we just listen to new music and have a chat. And it's just basically like hanging out with your mates in the pub, listening to new bands. And it's really nice. And like, people show up. And I feel like we have definitely engaged a lot with our fan base with it. And I think that's kind of important. And yeah, I don't know. In honesty, it's kind of a bit of fun. And I think as we get busier into the work on the new album this year, it's probably going to wind down a little bit, but we'll still keep it going. But also another thing which I'm doing one this week actually, and I don't know how timely this is, but I did one of these the other week, and I'm going to do some more. It's just some music industry Q&As, because quite a lot of Tesseract fans and people in bands, they want to know how stuff works and how can they further their bands, or how can they get into the industry themselves. So I've done a couple of those where it's just basically like an ask me anything for an hour, and that's been quite successful as well.
Cool. So out of curiosity, are you guys making any money off doing the Twitch as Tesseract, or is it kind of more like just like a promotional tool, if you're willing to pay?
I didn't really know much about this, but we are people like to I mean, it's very much, I feel like it's busking in a way. It's like online busking where people will come on, they'll be like, oh, can you play this song? And then they'll drop $20 down or, oh, can you? So yeah, we've made a little bit, which is nice. It's a nice bit of, a bit of extra cash, which is always helpful.
But, so what's the actual end goal then? Because I mean, like a lot of bands do get into streaming to make cash. That's why I asked the question, right? So is it just like to keep the audience engaged and keep yourself out there or what?
I think it's a bit of both. I think because Dan and Jay they've made their channels very financially successful. Like they kind of make a living on theirs now. Thought we'd have a go as a band. And it's been basically, it's not been hugely lucrative, but it has been lucrative enough that it's quite, it's quite a nice bit of extra money. And I suppose if we really focused on streaming, we could develop it further. I don't know if we are going to go too nuts just because we've got loads of other stuff going on, but I think we'll keep it going as a small thing, which does make a nice little bit of money, like extra money, some beer money or whatever, and it's a good way to engage. I think that's going to be our strategy with it going forward. Also, to not take too much away from Dan and Jay's streams, which they take very seriously, but they do also make quite a lot of their living from it. So I enjoy the streaming, but I don't think it's something I'd want to do all the time. I think it's, I've got other things to do.
Well, that was gonna be my follow-up on that. It's kind of like how are you able to fit all this in during a week? Because you do have quite a bit on the go. You got streams, you got Hold Tight, you got two bands, family, blah blah blah. So,
I don't know. I don't ever rest. I know. I guess like in office hours, I'm Hold Tight. And then streams is only like the odd hour here and there, like the metal chat one. I mean, that's just a few hours on a Friday night. So in a way, that's kind of like my hanging out with my mates time anyway. That's when I would be just chilling. So, and then band stuff, I guess I squeeze that in whenever I can, to be honest, usually like the odd evening, over lunch, maybe in the morning after I've done the school run, do an hour of guitar before going to work. But yeah, I guess it's just a, trying to be efficient with time and not be wasteful. Got a lot going on.
A little. Okay, so we're starting to get into the half an hour mark here. So do you have any advice for people looking to get into the industry?
I think basically just try and fully understand what it is that you want to do and get into and just do it. Actually, I think like trial and error, try things, take opportunities. Because I guess you might decide I want to work in PR, but there might not be any PR jobs going, but there'll be somebody will have a role in, I don't know, social media somewhere, or maybe a booking agent has an assistant role. I mean, even if it's a totally different part of the music industry, it's a good idea to just do, take any opportunity, because it's quite a small community in a small world, and there's always probably ways to try and work your way to where you want to be. So yeah, I think just do it and persevere. I mean, that's a story I always like to tell, actually. Back in 2000, like early days when me and Barley were doing Basic Records, like I remember the Metal Hammer Golden Gods had an after party, and we broke into the after party because we couldn't get tickets. So we snuck in there, but purely just network and to meet people. And it seems kind of crazy now that we would do that kind of thing. But we did. We were just like, we need to get in there. We need to be talking to people. So we basically essentially talked our way in at the door. We didn't break in physically, but we kind of blagged our way in through the door. And just basically do whatever you can to get involved. I think that'd be my main bit of advice.
Cool. So do whatever you possibly can. Just start somewhere then. Cool. All right, so next up, let's discuss these upcoming musical projects you got going. You've got two bands on the go here. You just released a single for one of them. Let's have you discuss this, talk about what's going on in your life musically.
Cool. My band Cage Fight just put a single out last week, and we announced an album that's coming out on the 13th of May. Cool. This is a random project which sort of came from nowhere, really, that ended up running with it, and suddenly it became something. Basically, me and the bassist John, we're over sort of like lockdown, we've been writing some thrashy hardcore stuff, and And Akul from Tesseract actually mixed an early sort of demo, and it was kind of cool, but it wasn't really, something wasn't quite right. Mainly, well, we didn't have a vocalist that fitted. And then pretty much a year ago, actually, I was scrolling Instagram and our vocalist Rachel popped up doing the Black Dahlia Murder cover. It was great. And I sent her a DM saying, we've got this project, you fancy having a go? And then she sent me a demo back within a day or two, and it was great. And then we were like, okay, here's some more. And by May, we'd released a demo. And then we got picked up by Candlelight Records, which was kind of amazing. And then, and so they said, do you want to record an album? We're like, yeah, all right then. So then we wrote an album. We pretty much wrote the album between February and July. Recorded it in July, and yeah, basically we've been sitting on it since then, and now it's finally coming out. And we've managed to land some good gigs. We've got some gigs coming up with like Napalm Death, which is going to be pretty amazing, and who else, various other gigs, but yeah, it's just really naturally evolved, and it's been really, really fun. And it's like the musically the opposite to Tesseract, so it's quite nice to do something totally different.
Cool. Yeah. And then what about with Tesseract? You got something going on there?
Yeah, we've got a new album, out. We're working on a new album now. It's mostly written, and it's going to be recorded this summer. And previously, a lot of it's been very kind of home studio based, mainly for budget reasons, and also Akul's a very great producer with very limited resources. But this year we're going into Middle Farm Studios, which is a big studio in Wales, to try and capture some great drums and performances. And we're hoping, well, it should be out early next year, but we'll probably be dropping a single later on this summer.
Cool.
If all goes well with recording. We don't know yet. I'm sure it will.
Cool. So, James, just to wrap up, I got one final question for you. So just how involved do you get on your own PR end of things, like with your own band? As obviously, you know, Candlelight's going to have an in-house PR, you know, your Tesseract's label's going to have their in-house PR. Like, how does this work? Do you like get involved, or what happens?
I mean, in the early days of Tesseract, because I did a lot of like telling everyone about it before we got signed. And then when we worked on the first album, I definitely annoyed the in-house PR because I kept getting involved, but partly because I was trying to get into that business properly myself as well. I definitely now, as far as Tesseract's concerned, I'm part of like the top level discussions of what we're going to push, what ideas we have, and so on. But I don't do any of the actual work. Leave that to the other PRs. And with Cage Fight, it's quite funny because we're actually, Hold Tight is actually the UK publicist for Candlelight.
I didn't know that, but
very kindly Layla O'Donoghue, who's the Spine Farm publicist for the UK, because Candlelight's part of Spine Farm, she's offered to do the UK here, so I don't have to. And I think it's better to, I mean, obviously I'm part of like the ideas and like how it's going to be pitched, but I think it's better to have somebody else do it, because I think journalists can be honest to somebody else, whereas they might be might not know what to say to me if they don't like it or whatever.
Yeah, that'd be kind of like an odd situation to be in. Okay, I didn't realize you guys were doing the Candlelight PR. That's funny. Okay, so to wrap up then, do you have anything final that you want to say to the listeners before we end off?
Well, actually, yeah, I just wanted to quickly plug something that Hold Tight's doing, because it ties into the whole Twitch thing. Because obviously we do PR and we do radio plugging and so on, but we've been developing our sort of other offerings, because, you know, not everybody needs PR, but there's like, or they're not ready for PR, but there are other marketing, you know, other ways to reach audiences. So we've been developing our digital marketing kind of department, if you like, and we're doing things like, obviously, like social media marketing and lots of sort of advertisement based stuff, Google kind of AdWords, YouTube kind of things. But we've also started doing email marketing as well, which is an interesting one, because it's something that kind of gets ignored. And if you've got a good mailing list, it's actually an absolute key way to keep your fan base engaged. But the thing I wanted to plug specifically was, and it relates to Twitch, is that we've also launched, we're going to launch a Twitch channel where we're going to try and do some more informative kind of Q&A type things. And basically just try and, you know, demystify the music industry a bit. I guess like you're doing with your podcast, that's like, I think it's good to try and be helpful and to try and, you know, explain things to people. And yeah, we'll try and interview some people. Basically, not the same, we're going to rip off your idea, but basically try and do something that serves a similar purpose, to basically just try and inform people and be a useful resource, as well as you know, everything else we're doing. So yeah, so that Twitch handle is going to be Hold Tight Live, so it's well worth a check out if anyone's interested.
When are you going to be streaming? What times are you going to be streaming that?
We don't know yet. I think we're probably not going to launch until April. We're going to basically just try and do a test run, because we did have a YouTube series called Coffee or Beer, where Darren, who does our digital marketing, interviewed people in the industry, and that was good fun. And basically want to kind of bring that back, but in a more Twitch live type environment.
Nice. Cool. Well, that sounds like it'd be really, really cool. So be on the watch out for that. Other than that, thank you, James, for coming. And we are done.
If you enjoyed this podcast, please help spread the word by leaving us a 5-star review on your platform of choice. You can also join the conversation by following us on any social media and suggesting guests or topics you'd like to learn more about. Thanks for listening to C Squared.